coming up on New York Now, a new era begins in the Senate.
So help me God.
Thank you.
And Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone joins us in studio.
Do you have any interest in running for governor in 2022?
New York Now is next, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off this week. It's a new year with a lot of new faces at the state capitol, particularly in the Senate chamber, where an historic changing of the guard took place on Wednesday.
I do solemnly swear.
The traditional swearing in of all 63 senators took place Wednesday, just before the lunch hour. For the first time since 2010, the Democrats control the chamber with 39 members, 15 of which are brand new.
To the best of my ability, so help me God.
The last person to be sworn in on the floor was Yonkers Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, the first woman to ever lead a chamber at the state capitol.
So help me God.
So help me God.
She addressed the members afterward.
We need only to look at Washington, where the administration has embraced the path of putting up barriers to the extreme that has literally shut down the federal government to build a wall. But not all barriers are that obvious. Sometimes, even in seemingly progressive places like New York, barriers still exist. We are going to break down some more barriers.
Stewart Cousins outlined legislation her conference is looking to pass in 2019, including voting reforms, the Reproductive Health Act, the DREAM Act, more gun control measures, and making the tax cap permanent.
By delivering this diverse, talented, and historic group of senators to Albany, the people of our great state have made it crystal clear which path they expect us to take. So, I address my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. From every corner of New York, I invite you and all of us to join to create opportunity for every New Yorker, to level the playing field for every child, and to make this state as great as the people who live in it. Thank you so very much. Let's get to work.
The GOP, now in the minority, argued against some of the new rules implemented by the Democrats, including the number of Republicans who will be on the Ethics Committee. That led to this moment, Western New York Senator Kathy Young providing an unintentional moment of humor for some in the chamber when discussing past relations between the two conferences.
We are just asking that you treat this conference the same way that we treated you when you were in the minority, as far as the rules go.
Over the holidays, the now Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan announced he would be entering treatment for alcohol dependency for the second time in 2 years. In the meantime, Utica Senator Joe Griffo will lead the conference. He was asked about Flanagan Wednesday.
Senator Griffo, when you talked to Senator Flanagan recently, do you have a hard day on when he may return?
I have had the opportunity to speak to Senator Flanagan. I believe he is making great progress in his fight, and I know that there's great sensitivity and empathy to that challenge. And it is my understanding that in this particular program, it is a 31-day program that is recognized and the protocol accepted. So we'll know more. I don't have a hard firm, but I'm thinking this month.
Do you expect him to be the leader of the conference when he returns?
At this point in time, we are united and supportive of his efforts to take care of himself and his health, and he will return as the leader of this conference, and we'll have opportunities to have a good discussion about our future together collectively.
And finally, Hillary Clinton joined Governor Cuomo and women from both the Assembly and Senate Monday in a push to get the Reproductive Health Act passed in 2019.
Now, there are a lot of critical issues that we're facing as New Yorkers and as Americans, but this issue of women's rights and access to health care is way up on the top, and I thank the governor and lieutenant governor and the legislature for prioritizing it. Yes, it is an economic issue, but more than that, it's an issue of fairness, equality, justice, and opportunity. I fiercely believe, as I said more than two decades ago, that human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights.
With Democratic majorities in both the Assembly and Senate, the RHA is expected to pass this legislative session, and perhaps as early as January 22nd, the 46th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision.
All right, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio joins us now at the news desk. Karen, quite the day on Wednesday.
Yeah, it was. It was one of the rare, really happy days at the Capitol. I think it was the happiest day since David Paterson became governor. People were just happy to see change, see a milestone with the first woman, an African-American woman, a Senate leader. You had all these new senators. They brought their families. They're often young families. It was just a very festive atmosphere. And I'll tell you, a lot of these new senators, they're not going to be backbenchers who sit there for a few years and wait for something to happen. A lot of them are chairing big committees. I talked to Senator Zellner Myrie, a young freshman senator. He's chair of the Elections Committee. And the second day that he's going to be in the Senate, they're going to be passing voting reforms. So that's like pretty amazing. For those of us who have covered Albany, like you and I, for a long time, usually things start off really slow. There's a lot of talk, but nothing happens. So they're really, they're planning starting Monday to really start doing things.
Well, let's get into that, because they kind of laid out an agenda for Monday and Tuesday, some big items, including voting reforms.
That's right. There's going to be early voting if this goes through. You'll have 11 days to vote in the next election instead of just one day. They hope to eventually have mail-in voting, but they have to change the state's constitution for that. They're also going to do some campaign finance reform, closing the infamous LLC loophole.
Something we've talked about for years and years.
Yeah, that's a backdoor way to getting lots of campaign money that frankly benefited Governor Cuomo. That's how he managed to spend $30 million and raise all that money in this election cycle. They're going to do transgender rights on Tuesday. The Reproductive Health Act, which is codifying Roe v. Wade abortion rights into law, that's going to happen January 22nd. So they're really hitting the ground running and with something, a couple of big items every single week in January. They're helping.
Should we be looking for any kind of a battle of egos between Governor Cuomo and maybe the Senate Dems, or maybe just the Democrats in general? You know, who gets credit for pushing all of these items that have been on the shelf for all these years?
Where in Governor Cuomo's involved, there always is some kind of ego issue going on. We've already seen him move up his State of the State budget message by 2 weeks. He abruptly announced Thursday it's going to happen on January 15th when he'd been telling people the end of the month. He's afraid the Senate Democrats and the Assembly Democrats are going to pass half of his agenda before he can get his name on some of it. So I think he's trying to act quickly on that.
Those of us viewers who were on social media probably saw a clip from Governor Cuomo. He had a gaggle right after all the festivities in the Senate chamber.
Yeah, he didn't attend the festivities in the Senate chamber, but he did have a Q&A at about 5 o'clock that afternoon.
And tell the viewers, what happened here? This was kind of another gaffe that he had.
Okay, do I have to tell this story based on the last time that he had a press conference and he got in trouble for the things that he said, you know, regarding sexual harassment?
You weren't involved in this one, I guess.
No, I wasn't. He made an inappropriate joke about the Me Too movement, implying that reporters were too close to him and he would bring us up on charges under Me Too. And a lot of people took it the wrong way. Let's put it this way. He has kind of an old-fashioned sense of humor. It doesn't always go over that well, especially talking to some of my younger colleagues who were there and younger people on social media. They just felt like that wasn't appropriate.
But we should mention this is our first roundtable since the end of December. News broke since then that John Flanagan, the now Senate Minority Leader, as we talked about in headlines, is now in rehab for a dependency on alcohol. This means Joe Griffo from Utica is the temporary leader. This is the second time in 2 years, and I asked the question, and others did, on Wednesday, you know, is he still going to be the leader when he comes back at the end of the month?
Well, I guess, you know, it's a good step that addiction and alcoholism, people aren't judged the way they used to be. It's being treated like any other illness. If he had cancer that recurred or a heart problem that he had to go back in the hospital, I think people would give him some slack. And right now, they're giving him some slack, and he intends to come back. He's in a 30-day treatment program. But they did seem a little rudderless this week. They've also lost Senator John DeFrancisco, who decided not to run again, who used to be deputy majority leader and was a good leader. So they're kind of leaderless right now. And I think I could see on Wednesday that the Senate Republicans just seem kind of shell-shocked because they've been in power for decades, except for a brief, you know, one-year period, 2008, 2009. And they were just kind of sitting on the sidelines, politely clapping for everything, but just looking very disheartened about what their fate is now.
Right. The sides were flipped there.
Totally out of power.
A couple more things before we run out of time. Number one, Dean Skelos and his son, Adam Skelos, reported to jail this week. Kind of the end of the storyline for Dean Skelos, once one of the most powerful people in state government.
That's right. Closing that chapter, former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, I believe he's still awaiting to start his prison term. Governor Cuomo's former closest aide, Joe Prococo, going to prison later this month. So closing this chapter on corruption, who knows if there's going to be another wave of it. I mean, we don't have any of it now except one brief investigation into some of the things in the Cuomo administration.
And a New York politician is going to Iowa. Politico reported that Kirsten Gillibrand, the junior U.S. senator, who's from the Capital Region originally, is headed to Iowa next weekend and may open up her presidential campaign headquarters in the collar city of Troy.
That's what I was going to say. More exciting for us, she might have headquarters in Troy. Well, Troy is an old industrial city that's trying to turn itself around, so it's kind of, you know, a symbol of, you know, a troubled part in America that is trying to get better, so it seems like it'd be appropriate place. She's really low in the, you know, the polls or name recognition, but hey, why not? Give it a shot.
With Elizabeth Warren announcing that now is the time. You can't really wait too much
longer. You can't wait. So we'll see what happens.
We'll have to leave it there. Our thanks to Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. Time for this week's New York Now poll question. Would you like to see Roe v. Wade codified into the state's constitution? As always, let us know at nynow.org. Last week, we asked, how would you define Andrew Cuomo's first two terms in office as governor? And here are the results. Ann in Cohoes voted mixed bag, saying unhappy he vetoed the Museum Education Act and his comments on teachers' unions, but happy with his stance on social issues. Amanda in Saratoga County said mostly successful. I personally have benefited from the improvements in healthcare and the Family Leave Act, but his pivots on marijuana and free college have left me feeling like he's an opportunist. And finally, Joe in Westchester County, watching on WNET, voted unsuccessful. He succeeded in driving over 1 million people from the state while implementing policies that have raised the cost of living. Thank you to all those who voted, and to do so again, just head to nynow.org. A good week for Democrats across the state as Wednesday saw the official swearing-in of Andrea Stewart-Cousins as the Senate Majority Leader, the first woman to hold that title. She had a lot of support at the Capitol, including Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone, who now joins us in studio. County Executive, thanks for joining us here in the Capitol Region. What brings you up? Why was it so important for you to be here today?
Well, it's great to be here. You know, this was a history-making moment for the state. This is the first time a woman has led a majority caucus in the New York State Legislature. That's a significant moment for everyone in the state. For me, father of two daughters, you know, you love to see those moments happen. I do believe we need to continue to bring more women into politics, into elected office, and to see Andrea leading the chamber, breaking that glass ceiling, I think it's a significant thing for the state of New York and a very good thing for all of us.
For those who don't know their geography that well, Suffolk County is the eastern end of Long Island. The spot where we saw a lot of big upsets in the state Senate. We saw Carl Marcellino go down, and maybe the biggest surprise was Kemp Hannon, who had been an elected official. It was in the state assembly, I think, beginning in 1977. So a big change on Long Island.
Yeah, we always knew Long Island was going to be a battleground. It was in 2016 when Jim Gorin came very close. John Brooks, Senator Brooks, who won a very close race.
And it was a big target for the GOP, but still ended up winning.
Very much. Had a great win this year. But, you know, the Kemp Hannon race was a surprise. We always knew that was one of those races, wasn't really targeted. You would need a wave for that race to come in. Senator Kevin Thomas did a tremendous job out there working the grassroots, but that was a surprise to everyone.
Before we move on, how would you describe Suffolk County politically? I think for many years, a lot of people, at least maybe upstate, kind of considered Long Island, especially the eastern half, kind of a Republican stronghold. How would you define it, at least nowadays?
Yeah, Suffolk County is a very common sense type place, very working class community. I come from working class family, working class neighborhood. We have a lot of police officers, firefighters, teachers, construction workers. And it's a place where people will cross party lines. They will vote for the person they think gets the job done. So it's not particularly ideological. It's really your classic swing county, very similar to some of the swing counties we saw this year in Pennsylvania, or in the presidential in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. Suffolk County is a bellwether in that sense.
And Lee Zeldin, the Republican congressman who represents, I think it's the first district down in Long Island. That was for a couple of years. That just went back and forth and back and forth before he's kind of hunkered in now for a couple of terms.
It's a good example. You know, you have Congressman Lee Zeldin, who represents that district now, you know, very much on the right side. And you had Congressman Tim Bishop, who was definitely center left, who represented the district for 10 years. So it is a classic swing area, Suffolk County.
One of the things you're going to be pushing for this year is something called the Suffolk County Fairness Agenda. A part of it includes legislation you're hoping to get passed now that Democrats are in control, that would force online sales platforms to be subject to the same tax collection as brick and mortar stores. Why is that important for you?
Well, we saw the Supreme Court come down with the decision saying that this is appropriate. The bottom line is you have brick and mortar retail stores that are getting hammered right now. We're seeing, you know, closed, out of business signs on our main streets. And the problem is these are the businesses that are paying property taxes. Oftentimes, these are the small business owners who are contributing to the community, coaches of our Little Leagues and Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you know, really bedrocks in the community. And they are suffering because you have online sales, which is something that's transformed our economy. It's in many ways a positive thing. But they shouldn't have a competitive advantage over our brick and mortar retail outlets. So
trying to even out the playing field here.
100%. They should be, and that's why we call it, this is a fairness issue. They should be paying and collecting the same way that our brick and mortar stores have to. And in the absence of creating a level playing field here, we are putting more pressure on these brick and mortar stores. They go out of business, you stop those property tax collections from coming in. Where does the burden fall? It falls on homeowners then. And that's exactly the opposite direction we want to be moving in.
This is something you've pushed before, is it not?
This is something that has been on the agenda before. I was with Nassau County Executive Laura Curran, Chamber of Commerce presidents from across Long Island, Main Street businesses who are out there and advocating for this. And this is something I know the governor has had in the budget last year as well. So it's been an issue that's out there. It's the right thing to do. It's about fairness. It's about protecting the small business owners and doing the right thing for our communities.
You're also looking to see some changes regarding the distribution of ride-sharing sales tax revenue. What are you looking at there?
Well, it's another fairness question. You know, look, we support ride-sharing. I was one of the first people to come out and advocate for it for suburban communities in particular. I think ride-sharing is a game-changer. It gives you the ability to move people around when you enhance public transportation. That last-mile connection makes it possible for people to really move around suburban communities without having to get into a car all the time, which for our future economic growth is going to be critical. However, same issue here. They should be paying the sales tax. They're providing that service. Taxi companies pay the sales tax. They should be paying the sales tax. It's a simple matter of they're utilizing the roadways. And I get same thing with online retailers. In the beginning, you may want to exempt them from certain taxes that other people are required to pay, other companies are required to pay because you want to see it grow. But with the internet, and I think with ride sharing, we're seeing these are mature industries now that are having real impacts on our roadways. We just had a cover story in Newsday talking about potholes, right? You fix potholes with resources that come from taxpayers. We need to make sure that all classes of taxpayers are paying the existing taxes, so we have the resources necessary to build the infrastructure, to repair the infrastructure out in our roadways.
We know the opioid epidemic, it's something we've covered here on the show many times, has really been a scourge across the state. Long Island, I'm sure, is no different. You had an op-ed recently with Erie County Executive Mark Kolenkars, who was on our show last week. How is that? How is the opioid epidemic affected Suffolk County? What have you seen firsthand?
Well, it's devastating. I've talked to, you know, moms and dads who've lost sons, daughters. You know, it's one of those issues. You know, it's scary because you don't know who's going to be impacted. You don't know who might be predisposed to the addiction. But what we do know is if you become addicted, your family is in for a long period of economic, financial, and all sorts of suffering that unfortunately too often has resulted in death for those individuals. So it is a crisis issue. County Executive Kolenkars has done an outstanding job on this issue. In fact, he represented counties on a federal task force, and we did a forum in Suffolk County when he came down there. So I know that's an issue he's very focused on. We have an outstanding district attorney in Tim Seney, who's done a terrific job on this, and we've confronted it on a comprehensive basis. It's not just traditional law enforcement. You've got to do prevention. You've got to do treatment. You've got to be doing all of those, and we've been doing that. We're going to be having a forum coming up with the Rockefeller Institute highlighting some of the progress that's been made and where we need to go from here.
Now that we have you here, we hear an awful lot, especially from President Trump, about these MS-13 gangs, right, and how they're on Long Island. And, you know, we hear that a lot. Is that a big issue? Is it overblown? You know firsthand.
What I would tell you is that we have MS-13 on the run. I have made a commitment. The district attorney, Tim Seney, who is a former police commissioner who I had appointed to that position, he had come to me when the two young women were brutally murdered, which really drew the attention to this issue, and Kayla Cuevas and Nisa Mickens. And he said, look, my intention is we're going to solve these murders. And then, of course, there were other murders that occurred. But our intention here is to eliminate this gang, eradicate this gang from our county, from our region. And I said, 100%, I support that. We're going to be very clear on what we intend to do. And we've arrested hundreds of MS-13 gang members. And this gang is on the run right now. And we're going to keep the pressure up on them.
Last question. I think it was at the Democratic State Convention this year at Hofstra on Long Island. I was chewing the fat with a fellow journalist while we were waiting for a press conference. I'm like, all right, Andrew Cuomo doesn't run in 2022. Mm. Who's your top Democrat that gets the top of the ticket that year? And this person immediately said Steve Ballone. Is that something you're thinking about at all? I mean, it's a little ways down the road, and who knows, Andrew Cuomo might run for a fourth term. But do you have any interest in running for governor in 2022?
Look, I'm excited about re-election in Suffolk County. It's an amazing place. I'm raising my family there, three young kids, you know, and I want them to be able to you know, grow up and raise their families there and be successful. So that's my focus. I'm excited about our agenda. The governor's done a great job supporting things that we need to do to grow the economy on Long Island, like Second Track and Third Track. I think he is doing an incredible job as our governor in terms of the accomplishments, the big things that he's gotten done. And I look forward to continuing to support him. You know, in politics, you never know what's going to happen. I've never been one, Matt, to lay out a whole political career down the line. My belief has always been focus on your job, try to do big things, and then, you know, we'll see what opportunities come down the line.
All right, well, good to see you in Albany. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
We have a constitutional right to bear arms, and that's what this is all about.
Almost overnight, he loses that base of Republican support that had supported him for his moderate fiscal policies, that cheered him as he pushed through a cap on local property tax increases, that saw him competently managing the response to tropical storms Lee and Irene and downstate to Superstorm Sandy.
A 48 point swing in his favorability rating among Republicans in 2 months. What happened in that 2 month period? The SAFE Act. He lost Republicans there, he never got them back.
Last week, we debuted our documentary on Governor Andrew Cuomo. If you didn't catch it then, you can watch it right now at nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media. One of those links will take you to the Capitol Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com. All right, as we told you earlier in the program, the governor says he will give his budget address this coming Tuesday, and you can watch it right here on your local PBS station. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, will join me for the live broadcast. And we leave you today with more sights and sounds from the swearing-in of new senators Wednesday at the state capitol. Thanks for watching. We hope to see you Tuesday for the budget address right here on your local PBS station.
I, Senator Martinez.
I do solemnly swear
to support the Constitution of the United States.
To support the Constitution of the state of New York.
To faithfully discharge my duties as a state senator.
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
Thank you.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.